following audio is from the weekly message at Summit Church in the upstate of South Carolina. More information is available at summitupstate.org.
Good morning. My name is Brian. I know many of you. My wife and I attend Summit in Simpsonville, and I get the opportunity from time to time to be here to open up the Word for us. There are some other ways that you might, in fact, identify me, or I might identify myself. I can tell you that I'm a man, that's clear. I'm a husband. I'm a Bible teacher. Some of those ways of referring to myself are titles. Some of them are nouns. One of them is a name. I am a man, that's what I am. That's a noun. I'm a Bible teacher, that's a title. My name is Brian, that's my name. Now, why start that way? Because I want you to think about those categories, nouns, titles, and names, because we're going to talk about how God reveals himself in this passage in the book of Exodus. We're going to be looking again, Kyle started us in this journey, in thinking about how God reveals himself. But we're going to spend some more time thinking about how God speaks about himself and try to grasp what it means that he speaks this way about himself and what that means for us. So we're going to be in Exodus chapter 3, starting in verse 10. I'd love for you to open up a copy of Scripture and follow along. We're going to be diving back and back and back into the text, so it'll be very helpful. We're going to read it all to start with, and then we're going to go back and look at specific things. So if you have a copy of the Scriptures, it's always good to bring a copy with you so that you can follow along and read. I'm going to start in Exodus chapter 3, starting in verse 10. The Lord is speaking to Moses, and he says this, "Come now, I will send you to Pharaoh, that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt." But Moses said to God, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the children of Israel out of Egypt?" And he said, "I will be with you, and this shall be the sign for you that I have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall serve God on this mountain." Then Moses said to God, "If I come to the people of Israel and say to them, 'The God of your fathers has sent me to you,' and they ask me, 'What is his name?' What shall I say to them?" And God said to Moses, "I am who I am." And he said, "Say this to the people of Israel, 'I am has sent me to you.'" God also said to Moses, "Say this to the people of Israel, 'The Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob has sent me to you. This is my name forever, and thus I am to be remembered throughout all generations. Go and gather the elders of Israel together and say to them, 'The Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, of Isaac, and Jacob has appeared to me, saying, I have observed you and what has been done to you in Egypt. And I promise I will bring you up out of the affliction of Egypt to the land of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, and the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites, a land flowing with milk and honey. And they will listen to your voice, and you and the elders of Israel shall go to the king of Egypt and say to him, 'The Lord, the God of the Hebrews, has met with us. And now please, let us go 3 days' journey into the wilderness, that we may sacrifice to the Lord our God. But I know that the king of Egypt will not let you go unless compelled by a mighty hand. So I will stretch out my hand and strike Egypt with all the wonders that I will do in it. After that, he will let you go. And I will give this people favor in the sight of the Egyptians. And when you go, you shall not go empty. But each woman shall ask of her neighbor and any woman who lives in her house for silver and gold jewelry and for clothing. You shall put them on your sons and on your daughters, so you shall plunder the Egyptians." Now here in verses 10 and 12, we're picking up from last week, God has an assignment in a sense for Moses. God says, "I'm going to deliver my people from their bondage." Oh, so Moses, you're going to go. "I'm going to do it, but I'm going to involve you. I am going to do this thing." And when he says this, Moses then has a question. Notice the question when he says, "I'm going to go and the people might ask me, 'What is his name? What shall I say if they say to me, what is his name?'" Now, we have to think about this. I do not think it's likely that what Moses means, when I show up, they've all become amnesic and they don't know the name of the Lord. So when he says, "They might say to me, what is his name?" If you go back through the book of Genesis and see when God reveals himself, oftentimes it includes a new insight into who he is, and in a sense, a new kind of name or a new title of him. So, for example, in Genesis chapter 14, when Abraham has defeated those who have conquered his nephew's town, Sodom and Gomorrah, he meets a guy named Melchizedek, who we're told is a priest. And he comes to Abraham and he gives Abraham a new way of referring to God. He says, God Most High is the one who's delivered these enemies into your hand. So Moses gets a new name, in a sense, as it were, for God. When Hagar gets separated from Abraham, you may remember Hagar's story. She's a slave, she's a servant, and she has a child by Abraham, and yet Sarah, his wife, doesn't want Hagar around anymore, so she sends him on out, and she meets the Lord in the wilderness, and there she gives a new name to God. She calls him El Roy, the God who sees. So he gets a new name there. In Genesis chapter 17, when Abraham is wrestling with the promises that you've made have not yet been fulfilled in me, particularly I don't have any kids yet, and you tell me I'm going to have descendants. Is it going to be Eleazar of Damascus? Is he going to be the one? And God speaks to him and says, no, I am, and he uses this Hebrew expression, El Shaddai. It is oftentimes translated into English as the Almighty. It doesn't mean might so much as Shaddai means provider, sufficient giver. And so Abraham is learning new ways of thinking about God because he gets new names, new ways of referring to him. And then in Genesis chapter 21, when Abraham has, for a second time, passed his wife off as his sister and has some problems with Abimelech, and then ultimately Abimelech wants Abraham to make a covenant with him that he's not going to deal poorly with him anymore. And in Genesis 21, Abraham gets another name for God. He is referred to as the everlasting God. So as you move through Genesis, you notice that the way that the people of God are speaking to God gets developed because they get new names for God. And I tend to think that when Moses is thinking, I'm going to go and say the Lord of your fathers has sent me, they're going to ask, what is his name? I don't think that means the children of Israel are going, we used to know the name of God, we just don't remember what it is. The name of God, we're going to talk about this, and it was touched on last week. The name of God in the Old Testament is probably Yahweh. We're going to talk about why that's the case. It's used 6,880 times in the Old Testament. It's used repeatedly in the book of Genesis. So it's striking to me, I don't think the children of Israel are going, when Moses comes and says, the God of your fathers has shown up to me, they go, I just don't remember what's his name. Can you remind me of his name? I think they're probably asking, is there some fresh way we need to understand him? Is there some? We've been in bondage for 400 years, and now you're telling us God is showing up. What new thing are we supposed to understand about him? And I think that's what Moses is asking. How am I supposed to identify you to those who've been walking with you for a really long time? And God then affirms this. This is the text that we looked at last week. God says in verse 14 to Moses, I am who I am. Wow, we sang a song about God being who he is and who he will always be. That's what that means when he says, I am who I am. He's talking about his eternal, unchanging existence. And he does that to explain the meaning of his name. In your English Bibles, you'll notice that you see the words L-O-R-D, all in capital letters. That actually stands in place of the name of God. The Jewish people, post this moment in time, when in the book of Deuteronomy it says that you're not supposed to take the name of the Lord your God in vain, they didn't want to inappropriately speak the name of God. And so wherever the name of God appeared in the Hebrew text, there was a little marginal note that says, don't say the name of God, but say the Hebrew word Lord or Master. English translations carry that over. So they place in the Old Testament text, the word Lord, all in capital letters, where the name of God appears. But the name of God, it's probably pronounced Yahweh in English. It's related to the verb to be. So when he says, I am who I am, tell them the I am one, the Yahweh, that's my name. And so God is unpacking for Moses the significance of the name Yahweh. I am and will always be who I have been and will continue to be. And so Moses now has some traction to think about, well, there is a new way to think about God. You've used this name, Yahweh. In fact, we sang a song about praising his name. And the word there was Yahweh, Yahweh. We love to shout your name. And some of you, not dinging you, some of you go, who's that? That is his personal name. It is the name of the God of the universe. There's a noun that describes him. He's a God. He's God. That means he's divine. There are titles. In this text, he's identified as the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. That's a title. That's another way of referring to him. But he has a name. Yahweh is his name. And God is helping Moses understand, you're going because of this relationship that I have with the people of God, my people, and I will always be what I have been. He is providing clarity about who he is. He is the eternally unchanging, always is and always will be who he has always been. He is the God of the patriarchs, not was, because he's consistent and abiding. He is the God who will fulfill his promises in the days to come. And he says, this is my memorial name throughout all generations. That's startling to me, because I think about that and I go, well, how come we don't speak about him that way? And hear me, I'm not saying that you must address God as Yahweh, but it is his name. He desires to be on a first name basis with his people. It is how he has revealed himself. He's revealed himself by noun, God, by titles, but also by name. And I was trying to think about, what are the implications of this? Does this mean that you must address him as Yahweh? No, although, like I said, 6,880 times in the Old Testament, he's called by name by the people. You know the 23rd Psalm? The Lord is my shepherd. Well, when David says those words, the Lord is my shepherd, he doesn't use a title, although English translations give us Lord. He actually calls God by name and says, Yahweh, I know you by name. You are my shepherd. Let me suggest this. Thoughtfulness about how God is revealing himself might actually shape the way we relate to him. What I mean by that is, let's go back, 35 years. I'm pastoring here in Greenville, South Carolina. Meet a family, and the very first Sunday that I'm there, I dedicate their baby. Her name is Katie. Now, for the following 35 years, my family grows up with Katie's family. And so my kids play with Katie and her brothers, and so we just know one another. But over my lifetime with Katie, the way she spoke to me changed based on where the relationship was. When she first began to talk, I was referred to as Mr. Onken. Then as she continued and her family continued to serve and participate in the church where I was serving, she'd refer to me as pastor. And then when she went away to college, she didn't move far away, but she went close enough that she asked me if I would commute down a couple of times a month to talk with her and her classmates about what was going on in life. And as she got to her final years in college, she sometimes spoke to me as Brian. And so when she reached out to me, if she referred to me as Mr. Onken, I knew she was thinking family relationships, her family, my family. When she spoke to me as pastor, I knew, okay, we're going to have a theological question because she's calling out to me as pastor. And there were then times when she talked to me as Brian because there was something very personal that she wanted to wrestle with. Do you understand what I'm saying? God here has revealed himself to Abraham, even in this short text, in a variety of ways. I'm God. I'm the divine being. I'm also the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. That's a title that identifies me as the God of the patriarchs. And I have a personal name, Yahweh. And my name means I am always and will always be all that I am for my people. And when I hear that, here's the question that I have for you. How do you think about God when you speak to him and about him? I think a lot of Christians have just like a jar of ways of referring to God, and we just randomly pull stuff out. But I'm going to simply suggest this morning, maybe it would be right for us to be less thoughtless and more thoughtful about how we speak, how we talk about him, and what we sing when we worship him, to be attentive to what it means when we think that we're worshiping him. We're going to continue to sing, and then we'll come back and pick up some more. But as we sing this next song, would you be attentive to who you're talking with? His name, the noun, his titles. Let's think well as we worship him. Now, we just sang that refrain, the Lord our God. That's actually what God says to Moses to go and say to Pharaoh. So when he goes to say to Pharaoh, the Lord our God says to set his people free, he didn't use a title. He actually named God by name. And that's why later Pharaoh goes, I don't know this God. It's not that Pharaoh was an atheist. Pharaoh has lots of gods. In fact, the 10 plagues that come up later in the book of Exodus are actually targeting various gods of the Egyptians. So Pharaoh's got lots of gods. And so when Moses comes and says, the Lord our God, he actually says Yahweh, names God. Yahweh, our God, is the one who says that you need to let his people go. And I think Pharaoh goes through his little file box full of all the names of the various gods he got. And he gets down to the wise and he goes, I don't have a Yahweh. There's no Yahweh. I don't know this God, and that's why I won't let his people go. But this idea, captured in these few verses here, that God identifies himself in a variety of ways, and it might be beneficial to us to think richly about the way he identifies himself. So before we pick up the rest of the text, let me just stop right there and say, do you have any questions about that? I've been thinking about this for a long time. I just introduced this idea to you this morning, and it might be, there's all kinds of strange thoughts running through my mind with regards to nouns and adjectives and titles and names and how that affects the way that I relate to the living God. And since what's supposed to happen on a Sunday morning is teaching, not merely telling you stuff, I'm willing to say, if you have any questions, raise them now, and let's talk a little bit about this before we go farther into the text. Does this idea that we've just unpacked, that you just sang about, does that raise any questions for you about your relationship to Yahweh, the living God?
Can you go back and explain why they didn't want to put Yahweh in text?
Why is Yahweh rendered Lord? Okay, so the Jewish people, not wanting to say the name of the Lord in vain, they wrongly concluded we should never say the name of the Lord out loud. So in the Hebrew text, when you came to the word Yahweh in the text, it's four letters, YHWH, the Masoretic scribes actually made a marginal note there wherever the word Yahweh appeared, and you'd see that it's like an asterisk in the text, and in the margin they would put the Hebrew word Lord. And hence, if you were reading the Hebrew text, when you came to that word, you wouldn't ever say it out loud. You would say the word Lord in place of that. Most English translations carry that practice over. And that's unfortunate. You know, I've been married almost 45 years to a woman whose name is Sue. There are times when I want to refer to her as Sue. I do not want to ever call her the little woman. That's an offensive in my mind. But I might call her sweetheart. There might be all kinds of other ways that I refer to her. But I get to call her Sue. That's her name. And I'm really grateful for that. And I think sometimes we lose the sense of how personal God is because we read the word Lord, and that's a title. It doesn't register to us as it is standing in place of his name. Do you realize you're invited into a relationship with the God of the universe and know him by name? That's just startling to me. If you all had the opportunity to visit the White House with the current president, you walked in there, would you just walk in, shake hands, and go, hey, Don, how's it going? No, because you're not on a first-name basis necessarily with the President of the United States. You might call him Mr. Trump, which is his name. You might call him Mr. President. You might call him the President of the United States. Those are titles. Those are ways of referring to him. But most of us are not on a first-name basis with Donald Trump. But you can be on a first-name basis with the God of the universe. That's part of the significance of understanding he has a name. Good. Great question. Anything else that percolates in your head? Yes. There are some places where the Lord is not capitalized. Oh, okay. The pronouns you're talking. Okay. Well, an interesting textual question. Okay, don't want to get really academic here. Hebrew is written in only one kind of letter, no capitals and small letters. So the capitalization in both Old and New Testament, Greek texts were written either all in capital letters or all in small letters. So this capitalizing pronouns, it's not in the text. It's done out of reverence for the editors are choosing when they see a pronoun that they believe is referring to the living God, then they'll capitalize it. Pronouns that are referring to Jesus, they'll capitalize it. There will be times in the Old Testament that you see the word Lord, L-O-R-D, and all the letters aren't capitalized, only the first letter. That's the Hebrew word for master. And it's right to refer to Yahweh as master, because candidly, friends, he is the master, right? When it says he's Lord of lords, that means he's the master of all masters, king of all kings. But when you see L-O-R-D all in capital letters, it's his personal name. There are a few places in the Hebrew text where the name of God is put together with the title Lord. So how would we do that in English? Lord, Lord? That seems a little weird. So the English editors will give you Lord, small letters, L-O-R-D, and God all in capital letters. The few times that happens in the English text, it is because it's Master Yahweh. We're using the title of Master and the name Yahweh. So that happens sometimes too. Good, good. What else? Any other questions? It is not the most important thing that you figure all this out. What is the most important thing is that you actually think about who you're talking with. Well, let's go a little farther then and reflect a little bit more on what's going on in this passage in Exodus chapter 3 as God continues to speak to Moses. Having provided clarity about himself, Yahweh, the Lord, Yahweh now explains what he is up to. And notice what Yahweh knows. Chapter 3, verse 16. He says, "Go and gather the elders of Israel together and say to them, the Lord, that is Yahweh, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob, has appeared to me, saying, I have observed you and what has been done to you in Egypt." 3:16, he says, I've observed. Now that language there of observed doesn't mean I watched from a distance. He actually uses an expression that is, I have been present and seen. So God is starting explaining to Moses, he says, I am this God who has always been, always will be, and I have been attentive to what's been going on with my people. And then in 3:17, here's what he says, I promise that I will bring you up out of the affliction of Egypt and into the land. I'm aware, I know what's going on, and I will do this. I will bring you up out of the affliction of the land. And he's sending Moses, and look what he says in verse 18. I'm going to send you, and you're going to speak to the elders of Israel, verse 18, and they will listen to your voice. Huh. God says for certain that they, the elders, will listen to what Moses says. God's got this plan going, and he knows. He knows where the nation is. He knows what's gone on. He knows he's sending Moses to speak to the elders of Israel, and they will listen to him. And then verse 19, in contrast to that, verse 18, they will listen to your voice, and you and the elders of Israel shall go to the king of Egypt and say to him, Yahweh, the God of the Hebrews, has met with us, and now please let us go 3 days' journey into the wilderness that we may sacrifice to Yahweh, our God. But I know that the king of Egypt will not let you go unless compelled by a mighty hand. Yahweh, God, knows that the king of Egypt will not permit them to go unless more happens. So verse 20. So I will stretch out my hand and strike Egypt with all the wonders that I will do in it. And after that, he will let you go. God is already telling Moses, hey, you're going to go. You're going to speak to the elders will listen to you. You're with the elders, you're going to go to the king of Egypt, and you're going to speak to him, and initially he won't respond to you. I know he's not going to initially respond to you. And then I'm going to do signs through you, and then he will relent, and he will let the people go. And then verse 21, really remarkable. And I will give this people favor in the sight of the Egyptians, and when you go, you shall not go empty, but last verse. 22, you shall plunder the Egyptians. I know how this is going to play out. I know exactly what's going to happen. I know who's going to move in what way. I know the elders are ultimately going to give attention to you. They're going to heed what you say. You're going to go to the king. The king is not initially going to respond. I'm already planning to do these signs and wonders so that, in fact, his heart will be changed, and he will, in fact, not just let you go. He'll send you away, and when you go, you'll plunder the Egyptians. God lays this all out for Moses. Yes, Moses, listen, Moses has a part to play in what's going to happen with the people of Israel. Yes, Yahweh intends to involve him, but listen, this isn't because God needs help. Moses, I'm really desperate. If you don't go, I won't be able to deliver my people. No, he's willingly involving Moses in what he is doing, but God is interested in involving Moses. That's amazing, but it's gracious for God to involve Moses, but it's not because he needs Moses' help. It's not because it's going to depend on Moses pulling it out, because God has already made really clear, this is, in fact, I know what's going on. I know what's going to happen. I know the elders are going to listen to you. I know the king's not going to. I'm going to do signs and wonders, and then you're all going to be delivered, and you get to plunder the Egyptians. God lays that out for Moses. So then I want to think about, is there something then for us to learn from a passage like this? How are we supposed to respond to what God is revealing about himself in his exchange with Moses? I think there's a word of caution that we need. We can start with the idea that, well, God calls us the way he called Moses. Well, seen any burning bushes recently that haven't been consumed? Okay, so there might be something about how God interacts with Moses that we can learn from. But how many of you are being sent to foreign kings to demand the people of God being... Yeah, so there might be things that we can learn from this exchange, but we got to be careful that we don't conclude that this exchange is, in fact, a model or a paradigm for how the Lord will deal with us. But there is something... Because there is something unique about what God is doing with Moses. We don't qualify for his role. We need to be careful to not overread ourselves into the narrative. But when we look at this section of the chapter as a whole, is there something we can learn and apply for ourselves? I think so. I'd like to suggest, rather than starting with what does this exchange mean about my life with God, we start actually by thinking about what does this exchange mean about God? Before we make it about ourselves. Is there something that we can learn about God from what we've just been reading in chapter 3? Let me suggest three things. Here's the first thing. We've already touched on this before the last song. God is known because he chooses to reveal himself. You don't work your way up to find God. God is known because he chooses to reveal himself. We know him because he is self-disclosing. We don't figure him out. You don't get to have the view of God that you'd like to have if you're going to be in a relationship with the living God. Can you hold loosely the concepts and thoughts you have about God as he reveals himself in Scripture to you? That is, are you willing to have a relationship with a God who reveals himself in Scripture? Or are you interested in just running with the view of God? This is what I think God is like. But what we notice here is that Moses and the children of Israel have a relationship with God because God has chosen to reveal himself. This is who I am. This is what I'm about. So this relationship that you are being invited into through Jesus, into a relationship with the living God, it's based on God revealing himself, not about us figuring out God. That's the first suggestion I'd make. Maybe we should think about, are we willing to let our view of God be shaped by what he reveals about himself? Second suggestion then is, seeing as God has revealed himself, it would make sense to me that we should think and speak and talk with him and to him in an attentive and circumspect way. That's what I've already mentioned. How do you speak to him? I don't think God is offended when I'm casual in how I think about him. I don't think if when I'm talking to him in prayer, I start the morning praying, Lord, thank you for the day. Thank you for what you have provided. So sweet of you to provide what we need. What I really needed yesterday was that great brunch. That was remarkable. I wonder if I get a chance to go back to that brunch again. And I've gone from actually talking to someone, because I'm not very thoughtful about who I'm talking with, to just random thoughts. And seeing as God reveals himself by nouns and titles and name, maybe it would be really important to be more thoughtful about what it means to be engaged with the God who reveals himself. Some years ago, I've been teaching for a ministry called The River, and we've done lots of classes, and prior to COVID, most of them were in person. Some of them now are still in person. Most of them are online. But there was a family that came pretty regularly to the in-person classes that we were offering. And I can remember one evening, one of the classes, a gentleman came up to me and said, I want to talk with you about my daughter. Okay. His daughter was about 8 at the time. And he said, normally at night we have a little Bible reading and prayer before we go to bed. And so we had read a passage of the Bible and talked with them, talked with my kids about them. And then I looked at my daughter, who's the oldest, and I said, would you like to pray? Because he said she normally just loves to pray. And so she said, sure. And then he said, after she said sure, there was just silence. She didn't say anything right away. And ultimately she prayed, and he asked her afterwards, sweetie, why did you wait? When you said you wanted to pray, you just waited for a while before you prayed. And she said, when we're in Mr. Brian's classes and he prays, it actually sounds like he thinks he's talking to someone. And I just thought I should think about who I am talking with before I prayed. What I'm suggesting, if God has revealed himself and you want to be in relationship with living God, I'm not saying that you must use Yahweh, that you must refer to him as God. You have to refer to him as the God of the God of Abraham, Isaac, or Jacob, or that you refer to him as the God who sees, or you speak of him as Shaddai, the Almighty Provider, or you talk to him as the eternal, ever-living God. But I am suggesting that when you do talk with him, seeing as he has revealed himself, it makes sense that you be attentive to where your heart is and how you're thinking and what words you use. It's a second suggestion from this text. There's a third. What we see here as Yahweh speaking to Moses is that it seems like God has been and always has been up to something. Long before Moses walked onto the scene, way back in promises made to Abraham, which is generations and generations and generations before Moses, God has been up to something. That is, he has eternally been doing what he wants for the display of his own glory and the good of his people. He will do and always will do everything he intends to do. And I wonder if it would be good for us to more fully rest in the truth that God knows what he is doing and will perfectly carry out his plans, even if you don't fully know what those plans entail. He was gracious and told Moses some, but as we move through the book of Exodus, we'll find he didn't have it all. In fact, there's a few times where Moses goes, this isn't working, and God goes, it will. I know what I'm doing. But I think that what's really sweet to notice is that God makes it really clear to Moses right here at the start, I know what I'm doing. I know where the Israelites are. I know what the problems are. I am going to send you. The elders are going to listen. I'm going to pursue my intentions, my glory. And you're involved in it. I'm inviting you into it. But he doesn't unpack everything for Moses. Would it be good for us, seeing as how God reveals himself in Exodus chapter 3, to realize this God that we're in relationship with knows what he is doing, is intent on doing what he is doing for his glory, for his good purposes, and he welcomes us into it. It's not that we invite God into our plans in hopes that he will make our plans work. But God has invited Moses into his plans graciously, wonderfully, amazingly. Doesn't unpack everything for Moses, candidly. I don't think Moses would have had the capacity to understand it all. But maybe that's the third thing to take away from this text. Maybe our God, the God who's revealed himself, the God that we can have personal relationship with, maybe our God is actually up to stuff in the world, and he intends to do what he promised to do, what he planned to do from creation on, and that he is working out his good plan, his good purposes, his good intentions, and he will accomplish it all. And at times invites us in. At times tells us some of it. But how good it would be if we just realized this God. He's Lord of Lords. He's King of Kings. He's the one and only. He is the Holy God. And he will carry out his good plan in the world, in the church, in your family, in our lives. Let's pray. I have to confess, Yahweh, that there are times when I hold a little too tightly to my view of who I think you must be rather than who you've revealed yourself to be. I think I often gripe. Because I don't understand what you're doing and how come it's not playing out the way I think it should. And then I realize that although you intend to be in personal relationship with us, you don't step into personal relationship with me for my plans to be affirmed. But you bring us into personal relationship with you so that we get to join you in what you're doing. And that would be good for me to recognize and to see. Forgive me when I think that you're my co-pilot rather than you are the pilot of this life. I am not in this chapter. Moses is, and you are. But as I read and listen, I realize there are things about you, how you reveal yourself, what you say about yourself and what you know that would be helpful for me to incorporate into my thinking about you. You're an amazing God. We're awed that you want relationship with us. And we ask you by your Spirit and through your Word to continue to shape us into people who live in relationship with you. Amen.
Thank you for joining us for this week's message. Summit Upstate's mission is to give every man, woman, and child repeated opportunities to see, hear, and respond to the gospel. We'd love to connect with you, so we invite you to reach out to us at summitupstate.org.